Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Jakari Jackson. Here's what we have in store for you on this June 24th, 2013 edition.
Tonight on the InfoWars Nightly News, where in the world is Edward Snowden? Questions raised after the whistleblower misses a flight from Moscow to Cuba. Then, 1 week of military spending could wipe out world hunger. Plus, do you have a problem with the city water? Well, you might be a terrorist. All that and more on the InfoWars Nightly News.
And welcome back. Top story headline, NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden goes missing. Now, briefly, a synopsis about Mr. Snowden. He was a NSA worker. He also had ties to the CIA. He blew the whistle on the PRISM system. That's PRISM with an M. He said, hey, a lot of these people are spying you. Microsoft, Google, as well as many of your social networking sites. He fled to Hong Kong, and that's where we pick up the story. After Snowden left Hong Kong yesterday for Moscow, he was expected to board an Aeroloft plane scheduled to fly to Havana, the next stop on his journey to a planned political asylum in Ecuador. However, journalists who boarded the same plane immediately noted that Snowden's seat was empty. Article goes on to say, earlier today, Ecuadorian Foreign Minister Ricardo Patin said he didn't know the whereabouts of Snowden, adding that his request for political asylum was still under investigation. WikiLeaks' Julian Assange has been protected by the Ecuadorian embassy in London for over a year. Now, Assange also claims to know the whereabouts of not only Snowden, but also his, I won't say his accomplice, but the person who was accompanying him, another WikiLeaks activist. So he's saying, Assange is saying that they're both safe, they're both in a place that they can't release, you know, the information for obvious reasons, but they seem to be safe according to him. But, you know, that's just speculation at this point. People don't know if he's in Moscow, if he was detained there. People don't even know, have confirmed reports, if he was ever on the plane to Moscow in the first place. So, you know, believe what you will. Assange claims he knows where he is, so you can believe that if you want. But it ties into this article talking about Assange and his asylum in Ecuador. We have this article from Mike Adams. Ed Snowden, beware. U.S. State Department has confirmed history of running covert abductions of Americans in Ecuador. Now, this goes down to say, herbalist Greg Hanton, you know, he was kidnapped back in 2009 by U.S. authorities in Ecuador, and they said he was an enemy of the state for doing what you might ask, giving his own remedy to cancer. He's found a remedy that, you know, I guess worked for him and worked for his patients, and he supplied this to the people in that location, and they said, hey, we can't have this. They sent in a team, they bribed some people, had a few payoffs. They went in and pretty much kidnapped this guy in Ecuador. So definitely beware, Mr. Snowden, if you did make it to Ecuador, if that's where you're planning to travel to, definitely take that into consideration and definitely read that full article from Mike Adams. We'll move on to this. California Senate passes bill requiring permit to buy ammo. Yeah, it does seem pretty ridiculous, don't you think? The California Senate this week approved a collection of bills, including one, SB 53, that would require background checks, permits, and fees for the purchase of ammunition. All ammunition sales would have to be face-to-face, happening only in the presence of a store clerk, and vendors selling the bullets would have to submit a sales record to the California Department of Justice. These vendors would also need a permit to sell ammunition. Kira Davis noted that SB 53 requires background checks and a $50 ammo purchase fee. So I'm not exactly clear if that's for every box of bullets sold. I definitely hope it's not. But to say that you need to submit to a background check to purchase ammunition and not only that, pay them to do said thing is just a complete overreach. These people have truly lost their mind. I'll just say what it is. They've lost their minds. Because think about it. You can go out and buy as much alcohol as you want. No permit or special thing required. You can go out and buy many things as much as you want. No permit required. But this reminded me of an article that we reported on earlier this year. Florida State Senator files bill requiring anger management before buying ammunition. You can see it right there. And we can scroll down a little bit. It would require a 3-day waiting period for the sale of any firearm and also would make it a crime to buy ammunition unless you presented a certificate showing you completed a minimum 2-hour anger management program either online or face-to-face. And somebody made the joke. One of my friends was saying, you know, making somebody take anger management to buy bullets is like forcing somebody to go to an AA meeting before they ever buy their six-pack of beer. And I would agree it does sound completely ridiculous and way far-fetched. And I don't believe this person is a bad person. This Senator Aubrey Gibson, or Audrey Gibson, I should say, out of Florida, the last person out in California. These are, I'm sure, well-meaning, good people who want these things, just want something, have a knee-jerk reaction, and they just want to do something about these epidemics, these school shootings and so forth. But they go about it the wrong way, in my opinion. You know, find some other way to help people. Exactly what that would be, I don't know, but making people submit information that just gives the government more knowledge as to your whereabouts, your activities, what you're interested in, I don't think that's the right way to do it. Now, we'll go on to this, talking about the way the world is viewing bullets and so forth. About 1 week of U.S. military spending would wipe out world hunger. Common sense just isn't so common. World hunger, an expense that has been calculated about $30 billion per year, that's billion with a B. To put that into perspective for you, the U.S. military spent $737 billion, that's billion with a B, on military defense in 2012, $30 billion of which would be about 8 days of such an expenditure. But, you know, you may be sitting at home, you're saying, hey, it's not the U.S.'s job to feed the whole world. And I would agree with you, and Mr. Gucciardi, who wrote this article, he would also agree with you as well. But think about this, it's not our job as the U.S. to be Team America World Police, to do nation building, to arm Syrian rebels who have pledged themselves to Al-Qaeda. It's not our job to do that either, but we seem to do that with no problem. But, you know, $30 billion, that's a whole lot, but you could feed, you know, maybe some starving kids every, you know, a couple places, but nobody wants to do that. It's just common sense just isn't so common. We'd much rather shoot up these kids' homelands and have them suck up the depleted uranium than actually give them a sandwich. We'll move on to this. Destruction of genetically engineered sugar beets in county brings in the FBI. The FBI is calling the destruction of two crops of genetically engineered sugar beets in Jackson County economic sabotage. According to an FBI release, one 1,000-plant crop was destroyed during the night on June 8th, and another 5,500-plant crop was destroyed overnight on June 11th, each on separate properties Syngenta partially leases from private landowners. The crimes are considered economic sabotage and a violation of federal law involving damage to commercial agricultural enterprises. Steele, that's FBI agent Steele, said domestic terrorism charges are certainly an avenue that will be looked at. It depends on the particular facts of investigation that are uncovered between now and then. Now, I'm not a farmer. I'm not an agriculture specialist in any way. But to say that damaging crops is somehow an act of terrorism is a little far-fetched as far as I'm concerned. You know, they brought in two FBI agents, and instead of calling this, you know, property damage or some type of vandalism, and, you know, I definitely, you know, feel for the farmers, you know, that's your crop, that's how you eat and feed your family and so forth. But to call it a crime scene, is beyond belief. I just really can't fathom how they would do that. And it just goes on to make you think. People are speculating that this may be some type of, I can't believe I'm saying this, a GMO false flag. They're saying many activists in the community are saying, hey, you know, we're anti-GMO, we're proactive against groups such as Monsanto, but we have no desire to go out and destroy their crops. And it leads us onto this article. Modified wheat is discovered in Oregon. Unapproved genetically engineered wheat has been found growing on a farm in Oregon. The wheat has is the same type that has been developed by Monsanto. The Department of Agriculture said it is not known yet whether any of the wheat got into the food supply or into grain shipments. Now, let's take this into perspective. The last one with the sugar beets, the last article with the sugar beets, was talking about how they brought in the FBI. On this, in Oregon, it's just the Department of Agriculture. So why the feds on one and not on the other? It just leads to more speculation. This could be some type of GMO false flag. There have been activists who have contacted us from the first incident with the sugar beets, saying, hey, we had nothing to do with this. You know, we're all a tight-knit community banded together against GMOs, and we had nothing to do with this. And, you know, these crops turned up missing and damaged and so forth. But we have this other situation in Oregon where the FBI is not called in. And, you know, if you would bring in the FBI on this one, why not bring in the FBI on that one? And you can read the rest of that in the New York Times. And it's just another way to get you into the system, to call you a terrorist. It's like giving you felonies for releasing balloons and so forth. But they're saying, no, this goes beyond, you know, misdemeanors and municipalities. You're a terrorist if you participate in these actions. And it brings us to this. Bureaucrat, water complaints could be act of terrorism.
You need to make sure that when you make water quality complaints, you have basis, because federally, if there's no water quality issues, that can be considered under Homeland Security an act of terrorism.
So the Harvard studies on fluoride, they're not a factual basis to make these claims about water purification, about fluoride in the water and so forth. So maybe this gentleman who was making these claims that you're a terrorist for even questioning the water supply, maybe he should look into those type of things. And it's just that, just like we said with the last article, it's just another way to rope you into being a terrorist. And to cap this off, we'll show you this one. This one is from September of last year from Paul Joseph Watson. DOJ-funded training manual lists bumper stickers as terrorism. Bumper stickers. Bumper stickers are now a terrorist threat. The state and local anti-terrorism training funded by the Department of Justice lists political bumper stickers expressing opposition to the United Nations and the support for the Bill of Rights as indicators of terrorist activity. Now, if we can scroll down a little bit, I think it's right there. Let's just read some of these bumper stickers. Know your rights or lose them, and also get us out of the United Nations. Things such as that, and I think if we scroll down a little bit more, we can actually see some of these bumper stickers. Okay, yeah, let's take a look here. All right, call to arms, get us out of the United Nations. Oh, that sounds pretty wicked. What else they got down there? Okay, got a guy tagging, shouldn't be tagging, but, you know, whatever. All right, and just more of the same, you know, if you don't like GMOs, if you like bumper stickers and you don't like being in the UN, if you say, hey, I don't want somebody from the UN to come and save me in a zombie invasion, which they really didn't do anyway, you know, in World War Z, if anybody had a chance to see that, I didn't really think too much of the film. But yeah, just say, I want to get out of the UN, and that's how it goes. And for our last story, we go to this out of Wired. Codefellas, this is a video about the weird people who spy on us.
I'm sorry, I think you have the wrong number.
Your name is Nicole Winters. You're 22 years old, single.
Unless things escalate with the handsome young man who came by your apartment last night at 11:32 p.m. precisely.
How did you get this number?
Your favorite food is Kung Pao chicken. You were kicked out of Brown University.
Brown? Are you calling about my student loans?
Calm down, Ms. Winters. This is Henry Topple. You've been assigned to me. Congratulations.
Oh, Special Agent Topple. I'm so sorry I didn't know it was you.
And that's probably not too far from the truth. People who enjoy spying on each other in the office. Hey, Bill, you went out to the baseball game last night, and oh, Susie's cheating on her husband. You know, these are the type of the people that they like to recruit to spy on you and your family, people who get off on this type of information, and I definitely encourage you guys to go and watch that in its entirety. Let's go now to our quote of the day. This is from Stephen Colbert. If you're doing nothing wrong, you have nothing to hide from the giant surveillance apparatus the government's been hiding. That from comedian Stephen Colbert. And that's going to do it for the news portion of our segment tonight. So stay tuned. Right after this break, we'll be back with David Knight in his interview with Dr. William Pepper, the lawyer for Sirhan Sirhan. But in the meantime, especially those of you who are watching this on YouTube, stop by PrisonPlanet.tv and get yourself a 15-day free trial. It funds our operation. You can get to Alex Jones Show, the nightly news, the special reports, and everything else right there on PrisonPlanet.tv. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with David Knight and Dr. William Pepper.
Now you can watch the InfoWars nightly news streaming live as it happens for free.
Check it out at InfoWars.com/show.
Johnny Appleseed was born during the Revolutionary War. He's not just a legend. And in more than five states, he introduced apples that had not even been grown in the colonies. Later, the seeds from plants he planted and cultivated and some of the varieties he developed spread across the United States. And it was Johnny Appleseed teaching the colonists and then the new Americans after we won independence the love of planting fruit trees that introduced that idea to North America. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a revolutionary act to unplug from the television, to unplug from the computer and all the globalist propaganda, and to go out in your backyard or your front yard or planters at your apartment or on the roof of the building where you live, and to plant a garden.
Become the Johnny Appleseed of your community with seeds from the InfoWars Seed Center at InfoWarsStore.com.
The simple act of planting fruits and vegetables and then tending them and taking care of them and then sharing them with friends and family is a revolutionary act against tyranny. The globalists, first and foremost, do not want us to be self-sufficient. The crony anti-free market capitalist, the fascist, are using socialism and collectivism to shut down societies. Stalin in Poland and in Ukraine and other areas starved on record more than 10 million people over 5 years by not letting them grow their own crops and collectivizing them. Mao killed between 65 million and 80 plus million people doing the same thing. The UN says they will use food as a weapon. They use genetic evil to attack the earth, and major GMO companies have been caught going into growth belts around the world, even where GMO is illegal, and planting seeds everywhere to infect the genetics of the original crops. Almost all of the thousands of varieties of Mexican corn has been infected. They are in a genetic war against everyone. That's why we have to get these seeds and not just plant them on our own gardens and not just give them as gifts to friends and family to plant spring and summer and fall gardens. I'm calling on you to go out into the green belts, to go out into the areas and plant secret gardens. No, not of marijuana, but of the hundreds and hundreds of incredible high quality vegetables and herbs and fruit plants that are here. Lemons and oranges, the list goes on and on. They will grow plum trees, grape trees. They will grow almost everywhere in the U.S. We can literally, not just buying these products from InfoWarsStore.com, but from wherever you get them. This aggressive program literally just came to me one morning when I woke up about 4 a.m. realizing that we've got to counter their genetic war against us with original, real crops developed over eons on this planet. We have the lowest prices. We bought it in the biggest bulk that some of these companies have ever seen to ship this directly to you from the InfoWars Command Center. We stand for life. We stand for liberty. We stand for self-sufficiency. Go to InfoWarsStore.com, click on the Seed Center, and as of taping this, we have the 7 top respected brands. We intend to continue to do research and find other companies, other specialties, other varieties to really take action.
The InfoWars Store Seed Center has the largest online selection of heirloom non-GMO seeds.
Check out these products from our newest supplier, Heirloom Organics.
The Medicine Garden for a natural remedy.
The Tea Garden that contains every important tea herb you can grow.
Fruit Lovers with 12 varieties.
And the Tobacco Pack, additive and pesticide free.
Join the gardening revolution today at InfoWarsStore.com.
This is a revolutionary action we're asking you to take. Plant seeds everywhere today. Nurture them, bring them to fruit, and pass on the knowledge to others. Become human again. Discover your roots in the soil. And remember, the revolution against tyranny is growing.
Well, our guest for tonight is Dr. William Pepper. Dr. Pepper has been involved in cases of the assassination of Martin Luther King as well as Robert Kennedy. As a matter of fact, he's trying to get a case for Sirhan Sirhan reopened based on new evidence that's come to light in the last 10 years. Dr. Pepper is with us right now. Dr. Pepper, thank you for coming on and talking to us about these cases.
Okay, it's good to be with you.
It's always important to follow the story wherever it leads, and you followed this case for the Martin Luther King assassination for about 10 years before you had the retrial. It was actually a mock trial. Tell us what the conclusion was of that trial.
Well, the retrial, I brought a civil action on behalf of the King family against Lloyd Jowers and others who were involved in the assassination of Martin King. The trial was an actual trial, civil trial, with a jury and a judge in Memphis, Tennessee. Went on for 30 days. Over 70 witnesses testified, and all of the evidence was laid out as to how Martin was killed and why he was killed. And so the King, it enabled the King family finally to have closure in terms of that situation. Took the jury 59 minutes after hearing testimony over 30 days. Took them 59 minutes to come back with a verdict finding Jowers and the defendants and we had named unnamed members of federal, state, and local government who were involved as being responsible for the killing of Martin King, and with no responsibility for James Earl Ray. So, and a little vindication for James a year after his death. He died in 1998.
Tell us what who they found were responsible.
I'm sorry, who they found what?
Who did they believe was responsible for the assassination?
Well,
of Dr. King?
they believed that it was a wide-ranging conspiracy, and on the basis of the evidence that came up, that he was killed by a single shot fired by a sniper who was in the bushes behind the cafe called Jim's Grill, was owned by the principal defendant, Lloyd Jowers. Jowers had admitted that he played a role in the assassination of Martin King, and so there wasn't much question about that. There was a military team there, Alpha 184 team there, and they were backups. They did not kill Martin King. Martin was killed by a lone contract gunman who got off that shot. Now, if he had not been successful, the military unit was there to make sure that Martin was hit. They were not going to ever let him leave Memphis because he was going to bring 500,000 people to Washington.
Wow.
And this, the Poor People's March and campaign. They were not going to march. They were going to stay there. Mm-hmm. And visit their congressmen and senators and press for a return to for funding for social programs. So they weren't. The military knew they didn't have the forces to contain a mob of that size if it got out of hand, and they were likely to get out of hand because they were likely to be frustrated in their requests.
Right.
So they had to stop King. That was their logic, and they did.
Well, now you're involved in actually trying to get the case of Sirhan Sirhan reopened as well. And a lot of people believe that they've seen this on television reports. It's an open and shut case. Sirhan Sirhan walks up to Robert Kennedy and shoots him. But that's not exactly what happened. Tell us what happened as far as your evidence goes.
No, it's certainly not what happened.
Right.
Sirhan was set up to be a distraction. He was hypnoprogrammed, and we had Dan Brown from Harvard come down and spend 70 hours with him. He's a world-class expert on hypnoprogramming. That's a means of controlling behavior through the use of chemicals, drugs, as well as hypnotism, not just hypnotizing a person. Mm-hmm. Sirhan was,
and that's very important for the public. That's very important for the public to understand, because most people don't realize that these programs go back to at least the mid-50s. Actually, earlier than that, it was after the result of these programs that Dr. Frank Olson died. He had already been involved in the mid-50s in a lot of mind control experiments and that sort of thing. So it goes back probably to the 40s at some point in time.
Well, there was a lot of concern during the Cold War that the Soviets were getting involved with mind control and brainwashing, and there was shock at the degree of capability that the North Koreans, in conjunction with the Soviets, had and manifested during the Korean War. So it was it was something that a great deal of effort was put into, and they have developed it as basically as a science, the way I see it, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And Sirhan was a victim of that. He was on cue. He had a handler. She was there, a woman in a polka dot dress, who attached herself to him and brought him into the pantry. When she gave him the pinch, that was the trigger, so to speak. That was the cue. He jumped down from the table and took a firing position some distance in front of the senator. He thought he was back at the firing range. That was what he was told to see, that he was back at the firing range, and he was just supposed to start shooting. What happened was it got off two shots in the front of the senator, and then his arm was pinned to the steam table by a number of people who jumped on him. So he had no control over his gun after the second shot. And he kept pulling the trigger robotically with his hand on the table, and the bullets went all over the pantry. Bob was killed by this distraction allowed him to be killed by a professional assassin who knelt down behind him and put three bullets into his coat and body, and one just behind his right ear, which killed the brain, and a fourth bullet went through a shoulder pad. They were all powder burn range. They were very close and fired at an upward angle. There is no question that Sirhan, who was in front, and we had a dozen witnesses who testified they saw him in front of the senator, could never have been in a position.
So to recap, Sirhan is standing in front, firing horizontally, whereas Kennedy is, and he only gets off two shots before they pin his hand down.
Yes,
Kennedy is
killed
with three shots from the back and a fourth that passes through his jacket
from
the back at an upward angle. Now, how did they convict Sirhan with this evidence? What did they do to get a conviction?
Well, his lawyer threw the case. I mean, Grant Cooper was his lawyer. Cooper was himself under indictment, under a federal indictment. And so they had all the leverage in the world on Sirhan's counsel because they had him under indictment.
Wow.
And he threw the case. He agreed to the state's ballistic evidence. He never challenged any of it, even though two of the bullets were not actual bullets in evidence. They were fabricated.
That's right. Now, you say in your movement for retrial, you say there were substitute bullets admitted as evidence in place of real bullets. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we know that's the case because there was a commission, the Wenke Commission, that looked at the ballistics evidence in 1973. And at the bottom of the inventory page, they received this evidence from the clerk of the court. And the bullets they received from the clerk of the court at the bottom of the page had particular notations that were on the base of the bullet. And the notations that were on those bullets that they received were different from the notations that were put on the bullets by the doctors who removed them, one from a victim named Goldstein, and the other was the Kennedy neck bullet. And so the notations on those bullets that they had at the trial were different. Mm. Then the notation that the coroner, the medical examiner, and the hospital doctor put on the actual bullets. So they introduced the wrong bullets. They also did, but they didn't. They didn't object to the state's whole case of the ballistics case. They claimed they were only there to try to save Sirhan's life,
mm-hmm.
and avoid the death penalty and all of that, which they didn't do. He was given the death penalty, found guilty, given the death penalty. And if it hadn't been found unconstitutional in California, he would have been executed, and that would have been the end of that story.
Wow. Well, it's important to follow this up because not only do we not want to see the innocent condemned for crimes of other people, but we really want to know, just as in the case of Martin Luther King, we want to know who's behind these sorts of things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the roads lead, for the most part, to agents of the federal government. These become people who are so undesirable in terms of the ruling forces in the society that they have to be eliminated. They don't kill everybody. They don't kill all people who are involved in dissenting advocacy and work. But if a person gets in a position where he is so dangerous, potentially dangerous to them, and they can't control him. This is Jack Kennedy, for example. Jack Kennedy became unmanageable. There was no way they could control him and get him to do what they wanted him to do, which was to obliterate the Soviet Union, heighten the Cold War to a hot war, invade Cuba. I mean, you know, the whole war mentality Kennedy was not going to adopt. And he was also pulling troops out of Vietnam, as you know. He'd given the order for that December 1963, troops were starting to be removed. He was making enemies right and left, and they couldn't control him.
This is why I think people have to be so concerned about what we see happening with the NSA, what they're doing to politicians. Even if they're going to use it as a coup to get somebody out, if they don't kill the person, it's still something that everybody should be concerned about. Even if it's not being used against them directly, If it's being used to change the government subversively, that should be everybody's concern. But, you know, you might wind up being the next Sirhan Sirhan. You might wind up being the next patsy that they decide to blame their assassination on. You never know what's going to happen, especially when they know every detail of your life. And if they've got total data control, they can basically insert information about you that fits their narrative.
Yeah, I think all of that is a fear. No question about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now, there was also, in the Sirhan Sirhan case, there was also some new evidence that came to light in 2004 about the audio. Tell us a little bit about that.
There was a tape recording that was made by a young researcher and journalist, and until 2005, there wasn't the capability. There was not the capability to do a computer analysis of that tape recording. So it lay there. But Phil von Prague, who was an expert and a specialist in this area, was able to do that, and he analyzed it, and he showed that there were 13 bullets fired from two different directions and two different guns. And that scientifically is conclusive. He said there were 13 bullets fired.
Wow. Now, it would have been enough if people would have just looked at the ballistic evidence. As you mentioned, the defender was actually being blackmailed, essentially, under prosecution for something else, and he didn't really look at the ballistic evidence. The fact that only two shots were even fired in Kennedy's direction by Sirhan Sirhan, and he was shot with three shots from the back, that should have been sufficient. But with this new evidence in 2004 showing that there was actually 13 gunshots, and, of course, Sirhan Sirhan's gun only held eight shots. It seems like that would be enough for them to open up the case. The fact that there was some prima facie ridiculous aspects about the initial ballistics, as well as this new evidence that came to light with the audio tape. So you filed this movement to get a new trial for Sirhan Sirhan about a year ago. Tell us where this is at this moment.
Well, I guess we've been involved in making application to the court, which has gone on for about procedurally for about 2 years, and we're trying to get there's a magistrate who advises the judge, and they late in the day have changed judges on us, and the magistrate's report that has come out has indicated that the petition should be dismissed. It's not a surprise. I mean, this has been the position of the court in the state basically forever on this case.
Mm-hmm.
They try to keep the case enmired in procedural issues rather than dealing with the merits.
Right. Right.
And the facts of actual innocence. That's how they prolong these cases forever.
Well,
so
it's
that's
still
the
important
situation we're in.
Yeah, it's still important. You've brought this to the public attention, and people are still hearing the evidence. Even if it's not going to be formally tried in a court, it's still important that you've pulled this together, you summarize this for people, and you're still getting the story out there. So that's good.
Well, we're if the judge follows the magistrate's recommendation, and if she really reads the file and the evidence, she should not, of course. But if she does, then we expect that we will go to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled that actual innocence must supersede, take precedence over any procedural defects in the case.
Wow.
So I think the Ninth Circuit is with us on this. We think the evidence is so strong that a reasonable a juror could not have found Sirhan guilty. So we believe we're all right with that.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court has recently ruled in a case called Perkins and McQuiggan that, in fact, actual innocence, if the evidence is, the bar is very high, but if it is strong enough, actual innocence must and should take any procedural defects out of the way.
Well, I think you have a pretty strong case. Yeah. I think you have a pretty strong case, even if they don't look at the new audio information, which it itself is very strong. The fact that he's firing from the front horizontally, and only two shots were even fired in that direction by him, and then you've got the fact that he was hit by three shots point blank from the back at an upward angle. That's just amazing that that got through the justice system, but we all know how things like that can be gamed. Tell us about another case that you're getting involved in that also dates back to that same time, the case of Mary Meyer.
Yeah, Mary Meyer in many ways is as or more interesting than the assassination cases of the Kennedy brothers and Martin King. Mary Meyer was the only woman Jack Kennedy ever loved. I think that's become now pretty clear. He was going to marry her after the second term. As we told Kenny O'Donnell and others close to him knew how close Mary was. Mary would visited the White House 40 times in October of 63 before they killed him. She was a powerful influence over the president in the cause for peace, and probably the single most powerful, courageous woman that I've encountered during this whole troubled period of time.
Mm-hmm.
She was turning the president clearly in the path of peace, and making him what the military called unmanageable. When they killed Jack Kennedy, she waited until the Warren Commission report came out. She was devastated by the fact that, of course, it covered up what really happened, and she went to her ex-husband. She had been married to Cord Meyer, a deputy director of the CIA, and divorced him in 57 because she just couldn't, it seemed, put up any longer with living that kind of life, so she left him. Peter Janney has written a book called Mary's Mosaic, and I have agreed to represent Peter as his counsel, and I'm working with him on a strategy to try to bring all of the evidence that he has uncovered and put in that book before a court and a jury. You might want to interview Peter. You might want to talk to him, get him on, talk to him separately, because he can go over all of these deals. He was close to Mary Meyer as a child. She was like a surrogate mother. He was close to that family. And his father, Wister Janney, was a CIA agent. He was a very senior CIA guy. Mm-hmm. And it's devastating for Peter to have learned that his father knew about the plot to kill Mary.
Wow.
In fact, was the first one to call Ben Bradley, the Washington Post, and tip Ben off. Ben Bradley was married to Mary's sister.
Hmm.
So it's a saga of enormous proportions, and I think it's an unsolved murder. They did accuse a black fellow who happened to be in the same wooded area at the time, but there was no evidence, no forensic evidence, and he didn't meet the description given of someone who was standing over the body, and so the jury acquitted him. So it is a 50-year-old unsolved murder, maybe the most famous unsolved murder in Washington D.C. history.
Yeah, the description of the murder by eyewitnesses and the physical appearance of this black man had absolutely nothing to do with each other, right?
Absolutely right.
I mean, it wasn't even close.
It was a farce, and they tried. However, we have identified. Peter has identified, and others who worked on this case identified an individual who was a CIA operative who was there on the scene, and it's an interesting legal challenge as to how to get this matter before a judge and jury, but that's what we're working on.
Absolutely. Well, I certainly wish you luck on that, and we really appreciate, all of us appreciate, the work that you've done to try to discover the truth. You know, it sometimes takes a very long time for the truth to come out, but it eventually does. People have guilty consciences about what they've done at earlier times. Maybe they were intimidated at the time, as we're seeing with the flight TWA-800. We have six whistleblowers that have now come forward now that they've retired. Maybe they're not as concerned about their careers. Maybe they've had a long time to think about this, and they want the truth to come out. So we see that type of thing happening over and over again with the Oklahoma City bombing, with flight TWA-800, and with the Martin Luther King assassination. And it takes people like you who are willing to go against the grain, go against the conventional wisdom, and really have a lot of verbal rocks thrown at them for going up and pointing out that the emperor's story doesn't really have any clothes to it.
I think that's right. But anyway, we do what we can do, and maybe it'll bear fruit someday, and maybe it'll help to alert the citizens of this republic so that they can come out of their somnolence, come out of their ignorance. You know, ignorance is fertile breeding ground.
Yes.
For tyranny, as you know.
Absolutely. And that's the lesson to take away from this. I mean, these are things that happened 50, 60 years ago, whatever. It still has relevance for today. Because if we don't stop the corruption, and if we don't have transparency and openness and honesty in government, it's really kind of eating away at this country like a cancer. And we're seeing the fruits that were sown back in the 60s with these secret assassinations. We're seeing those fruits sown out today with open drone assassinations and the Department of Homeland Security openly plotting to carry out operations on the American public, buying massive amounts of ammunition, holding massive drills in cities at an increasing frequency, and getting rid of the Posse Comitatus law. We see all of this stuff coming back as a threat to us because we never dealt with the assassinations and the criminal actions as they were happening back in the 60s.
I think that's right.
Well, thank you very much for joining
us.
I really appreciate you talking to us. Thank you, Dr. Pepper.
You're welcome.
Well, when we tolerate corruption, it only gets worse. And when we tolerate and allow the assassinations that happened in the 60s, when we allow them to cover that up, when we allow them to destroy evidence, as Dr. Pepper has pointed out in the Robert Kennedy case, they only get emboldened to do it again and again. Part of that case, as he was talking about, was the idea that Sirhan Sirhan did not know where he was. He thought he was at a shooting range and said that he had been controlled. Actually, he had testimony from an expert psychologist who spent a great deal of time with Sirhan Sirhan to ascertain that he was, in fact, telling the truth about that. But that's the hardest part of the Sirhan Sirhan story for the public to believe, because so many people in the public just don't want to believe that our government has been pursuing a scientific program that allows them to do mind control, and they've been pursuing that for 60, 70 years. We have a documentary that InfoWars is going to be carrying exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. You can pre-book that now. We're going to have a 90-day window where it is exclusively sold by InfoWars. It's going to ship in about a month, and if you're one of the first people to order this while supplies last, you'll also get a copy of The American Dream, and it'll show how not just minds are being controlled by the government, but our money supply is. The American Dream is a animated cartoon that lays out in a very quick and animated fashion how the Federal Reserve controls the money supply and how they put this all together. So it's a great way for people to wake up. It's a great product, and it goes along with The State of Mind for a limited time. When you pre-book this, you'll get a free copy of American Dream. Well, that's it for tonight's news. We'll be back tomorrow at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Now you can watch The Alex Jones Show live as it happens at InfoWars.com/show.
You'll find links to all of our content there and a free 15-day trial for Prison Planet TV.
More than 60 movies and documentaries all in one place at InfoWars.com/show.